In 1973, James McBratney was drinking alone at Snoop's Bar and Grill on Staten Island. It was like any ordinary day, where not a lot of people were present at the bar. As he was ordering a drink, three men came in. They were walking briskly towards his back and immediately surrounded him. McBratney found himself handcuffed and a gun was pointed at him. He was outnumbered and unfortunately had left his machine gun in his Cadillac. The three men started pulling McBratney away from the bar and were told, "You're under arrest. You've been this route before. Don't give us any trouble." After a patron attempted to intervene, one of the men fired two shots into the ceiling of the restaurant and ordered the other patrons and employees, including a young 16-year-old dishwasher, to stand against the wall. One of the waitresses managed to slip away from being caught and called the police from a payphone. Although people would get easily intimidated by the sight of a gun, McBratney was not like any other person. He continued to struggle to break free from the men, where he managed to drag the three of them at the end of the bar. One of the men walked towards McBratney, whilst the other two held his arms from both sides. He pointed the gun in his head and fired three times at the close range. The three men immediately fled from the scene, and soon after, the police showed up. Eyewitnesses managed to identify two of the three men, but failed to identify the third man, who was responsible for the shooting of McBratney. They were Gotti, Ruggiero, and Ralph Gaglione, assigned as a hit team to murder McBratney for the kidnapping and murder of the Gambino boss's nephew. The less than discreet operation would eventually become Gotti's signature as the crime boss of the Gambino family, the largest mafia family in New York City. Gotti's parents were Italian immigrants presumed to be from San Giuseppe Visuviano in the province of Napoli, Italy. They were John Joseph Gotti Sr. and Filomena Fanny DiCarlo. They were born in New York and had 13 children, where two had died at birth. Gotti was born on October 27, 1940, in the South Bronx, New York. Gotti's family was poor, and they moved frequently before settling in East New York, known at the time for its gang activity. His father worked as a day laborer, which meant he had an unpredictable income. Gotti resented his father for not being able to provide for his family, where, already at the young age of 12, Gotti was involved in street gangs, working as an errand boy for an underground club in the neighborhood run by Carmine Fatico. When he was 14, Gotti's toes were crushed as he tried to steal a cement mixer, which gave the mobster to be his trademark limp. He went to Franklin K. Lane High School, and he was reported to have discipline problems, and he was a bully. He eventually dropped out of school at the age of 16 and devoted himself to working with the mafia-associated Fulton Rockaway Boys gang. There, he met and befriended fellow future Gambino mobsters Angelo Ruggiero and Wilfred Willie Boy Johnson. By the age of 18, the police department ranked Gotti as a low-level associate in the Fatico crew. In order to further understand John Gotti's history, let's briefly look at the overview of the Mafia's history. There are a total of 24 groups or families throughout America, wherein each city there's at least one family in control. In New York City, however, there are five families, which are the Gambinos, the Genovesi, the Lucchese, the Colombos, and the Bonanos. For the purpose of not dragging and complicating the story, I will only talk about some of the families that will play a role in Gotti's rise to become the Don, and probably mention a few that I found interesting. To start with, there's the Lucchese family, who was headed by Lucky Luciano, who probably has the most unique background compared to all of the heads of the families because he was a surviving victim of the notorious one-way ride abduction, which is famously depicted in mafia movies, where a member of the mafia was abducted and murdered by their own members in a car ride. In Luciano's case, he was abducted by four men in a car, beaten, stabbed repeatedly with an ice pick, had his throat slit from ear to ear, and was left for dead on a beach in Staten Island, which he miraculously survived. In the Bloody Gang War of 1930, between Masseria and Salvatore Maranzano, Luciano murdered both of them on different occasions with the help of many young members of the family. Because of the high-profile murders and his good relationship with many of the powerful members of the family, he was given the title Boss of All Bosses, which he never accepted. The Colombo family, on the other hand, was headed by Joseph Colombo, where he became involved in criminal activities as little as a teenager. He drifted into the life of petty crime when he lost his father in 1938 in a gangland war. The family that had the most power between the year 1930 to the 1950s was the Genovesi. Headed by Vito Genovesi, he was the one responsible for the arrangements of the killings of several prominent rivals such as Willie Moretti and Albert Anastasia. He had so much influence that he became a friend of Benito Mussolini and befriended the U.S. military occupation authorities, avoiding several murder prosecutions that allowed him to operate his illegal business safely. Then, starting in the 1950s, the Gambino family took over the title as the most powerful family out of the five. The Gambino family in the earlier days was referred to as the Anastasia family because it was under the leadership of Albert Anastasia, one of the founders of the modern American mafia. Once the family was under the hands of Carlo Gambino, it was named after his family, which he reigned in power from 1957 to 1976. He died of natural causes, and his brother-in-law, Paul Castellano, took charge as the head of the family. John Gotti was working under Carmine Fatico when he received his first task, who was one of the capos in the Gambino family, which means he's the captain of a number of mafia soldiers. The task given to him was to hijack the truck at John F. Kennedy's International Airport. He wasn't alone in doing the task, as he was accompanied by his brother Genie and friend Ruggiero. Although this is when Gotti received his first major sentence where all of them were convicted of hijacking and sentenced to 3 years in prison, this is also when Gotti met his mentor and Gambino underboss Aniello Neil Della Croce, who will play a huge part in Gotti's career. Della Croce regaled Gotti with tales of past mafia glories under Anastasia, leading Gotti to adopt Anastasia as his role model. While Gotti served his time in prison, the Fatico crew moved from East New York to a storefront near Gotti's home in Queens. The group's headquarters was disguised as a non-profit organization called the Bergin Hunt and Fish Club. After his release from prison in 1971, Gotti was designated as the temporary leader of Fatico's gang while the captain faced loan sharking charges. In his new role, Gotti frequently traveled to Della Croce's headquarters at the Revenite Social Club to brief the underboss of the crew's activities. This is when the two became even closer together, probably because they have similar traits where both of them have strong violent streaks, cursed a lot, and were heavy gamblers. In 1973, Gotti was assigned as one of the hit teams alongside Ruggiero and Ralph Gaglione to hunt down James McBratney, who was the main suspect for the kidnapping and murder of the Gambino's boss's nephew. As you already know, Gotti and Ruggiero were detained for the killing in June 1974. However, with the help of the hired attorney by Gambino's boss, Roy Kahn, they managed to strike a plea bargain that they would only receive a 4-year sentence for attempted manslaughter for his part in the hit. Although at this point in Gotti's career, it seems that he is on a steady climb in the ranks of the Gambino family, it's hard to believe that he actually once wanted to live a normal life. He worked legitimately as a presser in a coat factory and as an assistant truck driver, all because he was married to his wife, Victoria DiGiorgio. They had 5 children, which are Angela, Victoria, John Jr., Frank, and Peter. Gotti met his wife at a bar in 1958 and was married 4 years later, where at the time of their marriage, DiGiorgio had already given birth to their first child, Angela, and was pregnant with their second. However, his attempt at living life crime-free was short-lived, and the couple fought constantly in the early years of their marriage and separated numerous times. By 1966, he had already been jailed twice. When he and his family made the move to Ozone Parks in Queens, New York, the budding criminal quickly became a major player in the Gambino hijacking crew. In 1976, the head of the Gambino family, Carlo Gambino, passed away and chose his brother-in-law, Paul Castellano, in charge of the family. In a gesture of goodwill, Castellano allowed De La Croce to remain the family's underboss, giving him control over 10 of the 23 Gambino crews. When Gotti returned from prison in 1977 for the killing of McBratney, De La Croce promoted the mobster to the captain of the Bergin crew. In March 1980, personal tragedy hit the Gotti family when 12-year-old Frank, Gotti's youngest son, was struck by a car driven by neighbor John Favara after the boy steered his bike into traffic. The death was ruled accidental, but Gotti and his family weren't able to just brush it off. Witnesses say Gotti's wife, Victoria, later attacked Favara with a metal baseball bat, sending him to the hospital. In order to save his life, Favara decided not to press charges against Gotti's family. However, the attack on Favara did not stop there. According to witnesses, Favara endured 4 months of death threats until July 28, 1980. During that day, Favara was clubbed over the head and was shoved into a van. His body was never found. At the time, Gotti and his family were on a vacation in Florida and denied any involvement and knowledge of his whereabouts. By the early 1980s, Gotti's prominence in the Gambino family had earned unwanted attention from mob boss Castellano. He considered Gotti's $30,000 a night gambling habit a liability, and he also disapproved of the Bergin captain's unpredictable behavior. Gotti's activities also caught the eye of federal agents who, unbeknownst to the mobster and his crew, installed surveillance equipment in the Bergin club. In 1985, the FBI had gathered enough evidence to place Gotti and De La Croce under federal indictment for racketeering and other associates indicted on heroin trafficking charges. The drug charges infuriated Castellano, who punished illegal drug trafficking with a penalty of death. The reason that he disapproved of drug trafficking so much is because of the harsh legal penalties it comes with. It might tempt accused perpetrators into betraying their superiors, and this is what exactly happened. As captain, Gotti knew he would be held responsible for the transgressions of his crew, and he needed to smooth over the situation. Gotti asked De La Croce to speak to the boss on his behalf, but before an understanding could be reached, De La Croce died of cancer. Gotti was ready to make things right again with Castellano, but because Castellano didn't attend the funeral of his dear friend, all goodwill between Castellano and Gotti immediately dissolved. Gotti saw the behavior as disrespectful and, according to later testimony, he decided to take action. 2 weeks later, on December 16, 1985, when Castellano and his newly appointed underboss, Thomas Bilotti, were gunned down in the street by a team of assassins in front of Spark's Steakhouse. Gravano, who was Gotti's new underboss, testified in court that he and Gotti watched the shooting of Castellano from a parked car, saying Gotti had arranged the killing. By August 1986, Gotti had become something of a local hero and icon in his Howard Beach neighborhood. When it came time to face trial for the racketeering charges, Gotti and the other defendants were acquitted of their crimes. FBI officials later discovered that the jury foreman fixed the verdict. It was a crushing defeat for law enforcement officials, and Gotti became the mob's symbol for invincibility, earning the name Teflon Don because charges against him just wouldn't stick. He was also known as the Dapper Don due to his immaculate style, which consisted of double-breasted Italian suits from Brioni, hand-painted silk ties, and his halo of perfectly coiffed hair. In public, Gotti had a different persona when compared to when he was in private. According to testimonies and secretly recorded tapes, he was actually a tyrant and a narcissist with a hair-trigger temper. The FBI then turned the conviction of Gotti into an organizational crusade. After pressuring the Gambino family's new underboss, Sammy Gravano, into testifying against Gotti, the mob leader was finally convicted of murder on April 2, 1992. It is estimated that while Gotti acted as a boss, the Gambino family made more than $500 million in revenue from illegal activities such as gambling, drug trafficking, extortion, and stock fraud. As a repeat offender, Gotti was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole and sent to a federal prison in Marion, Illinois. Gotti remained in jail until June 10, 2002, when he died in the federal prison hospital from complications with head and neck cancer. In death as in life, Gotti's funeral was big and bold. 22 black limousines, 19 flower cars, and hundreds of private vehicles crawled the streets of Ozone Park, Howard Beach, and sections of Queens. Gotti was buried alongside his son, Frank, at St. John's Cemetery, a graveyard that is the final resting place of many noted New York mobster, though none, perhaps, as famous as the Dapper Don. 16 years after his death, he's still a huge figure in popular culture. According to federal prosecutors, after his imprisonment, he appointed his eldest son, John Jr. Gotti, as acting boss of the Gambino family. Between 2004 and 2009, Gotti Jr. was a defendant in 4 racketeering trials, which all ended in mistrials. Gotti Jr. struggled to follow his father's footsteps and decided to abandon his father's legacy. Unfortunately, when you hear the name Gotti, it has become metaphoric for organized crime with the streets, Gotti Jr. says, in the biography documentary in which he explains his decision to leave the mafia life behind. "I don't see any way you could extricate yourself from this. I don't see any way it could be done. As hard as I try, it's extremely difficult."